To help support this podcast
and get exclusive bonus content and rewards,
make a monthly pledge at
patreon.com/universebox.
And remember to think outside.
You do not need to worry about Tom Doherty.
You are sweet, but you're not a fighter. You couldn't possibly take him on.
Trust me, he's been taken care of.
What does that mean?
Some time ago, he and I had an altercation. I asked him to treat you with more respect.
Oh, my God.
And he said he would treat you any way he liked, and he assaulted me.
Oh, my God.
So, anyhow, long story short.
To family. In the end, it's all that matters. Go find my mother before I chop off your other hand. Welcome to Legends of Gotham, where we talk about Fox's hit series Gotham, set in the world of Batman. I'm Bill Meeks.
And I'm Anne-Marie DeSimone.
And we're here on Tuesday night, 8:30 p.m.
EST.
Especially for you to talk about the latest episode of Gotham. And I always forget to fix my mic right before we get started.
Which is funny because you had to help me fix mine.
I know.
You're like, here, twist this, twist that, shift, burp, burp, burp.
It
Stop
happens.
Screaming, you know.
But as usual, we're glad
we
to
are.
Be here. We're happy to be here.
With our massive chat room of Bobby. Hi, Bobby. How you doing?
Yeah, as we know, the chat room joins us every Tuesday, 8:30 p.m. EST, live.universebox.com. I know a couple of our regulars aren't going to be able to make it tonight, Wynn, a Holy Bat Pastor.
Wynn's got weather issues going on.
But they sent in some feedback and
we
stuff,
like
so
feedback.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. So it's fine. Okay, so I guess we should go ahead and get started talking about this week's episode. So Anne-Marie, why don't you hit us up with the riddling, rhyming episode summary?
Oh, the riddle. How is a firefly just like a cat? When they start to fall, they never quite splat. Who can avenge a dead fascist youth? Gordon's the guy with methods uncouth. Who crumples Kringle? No need to question. Will Eddie find a new riddling obsession? Is Butch compromised or is he a fly hire? Theo will test the penguin by fire.
By fire!
By fire!
By fire!
By fire!
Anne-Marie, what'd you think?
It.
You loved it?
I did. Sweeps has been good to me this week.
This was a really intense episode.
Like, it was.
A fantastically intense episode. A very Sweeps-worthy episode. A little bit of a dubstep-y episode, too. There was a lot of dubstep.
There was dubstep?
There was kind of some dubstep elements to the score and everything.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't do dubstep, so I don't really...
Bwomp, 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 bwomp. Bounce.
Is that what that is?
Bounce.
I'm sorry. All I hear in my house is "Let me whip and let me nay nay."
Oh, let's
like,
not get.
Can't
oh,
even
no,
do that.
No. I don't want to get. I don't want to get a takedown from YouTube. Okay, so I guess
I didn't sing that good.
Okay, I guess we'll go ahead and get started with our main episode discussion before
please.
You sing that again. Okay, so first thing is the last thing in the episode. Okay, so if you guys have been following our show for a while, you remember our classic discussions about episode 5, Viper, about episode 14.
Exactly, you listen to it every Monday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But episode 14, whatever that was, episode 16, The Blind Fortune Teller, where we talked a bit about Indian Hill.
Yeah.
You guys remember Indian Hill, right? That Falcone and Maroni, Penguin negotiated the deal with Indian Hill.
Okay, so Maroni, no, Falcone owns it.
Falcone owned it. Yeah, because he got it from Maroni as a show of good faith, I believe.
Yes.
It also something that we kind of brought up after episode 5, Viper, and this is something I've brought up again and again and again,
hoping it was
going to circle back around, and that's Warehouse 39, where they were doing the Viper experiments, and Harvey and Jim bust in there at the end of the episode.
When it was all cleaned out.
And What's-Her-Name from Lean Enterprises is out in the car being like, glad we got everything out of Warehouse 39.
Yeah.
And I've called specifically, and you've mentioned it a couple times too.
A little bit.
That I thought maybe Indian Hill and Warehouse 39 might be connected. Turns out Indian Hill, this weird, experimental lab underneath Gotham City owned by Wayne Enterprises. So,
Wayne Enterprises.
So I'm guessing this is where the Warehouse 39 stuff was shuttled when Jim and Harvey got a little too close.
Well, they made it fancy. They painted things.
Yeah.
Nice
well, who
windows.
Knows what that Warehouse 39 looked like before they moved out of there.
That's true.
But again, we called it.
We called it.
Really,
we're good.
really glad to see this thread kind of finally start to pay off and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, I think this is where they shuttle everything after Viper. Mm-hmm. The quote from the guy pushing the gurney is, this is where we keep the rest of the monsters. Mm-hmm. So I'm really thinking that this Indian Hill facility is going to end up being a supervillain factory, kind of a way to bring supervillains into the show. I mean, we got a hint of that in Viper.
A little bit, yeah.
But I think this is going to allow us to get a lot. I mean, this is the rise of the villains.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be
they'll break out.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's probably going to be like a rise of the supervillain situation in the second half of the season is what I'm thinking right now. But, I'm expecting characters that we know are coming, like Mr. Freeze, among others, to come from this place. I'm sure Bridget will return, too. Firefly.
But now she's, what is the word?
Burned?
No.
On a gurney?
Flame retardant, but that wasn't
fireproof.
Fireproof.
There we go.
You like that? I'm like flame retardant.
What is it? The inflammable.
Inflammable
or flammable? They both mean the same thing. I'm also hoping that, and this is something I've been asking for since episode one.
Yeah.
Really since episode five, more like. Mm-hmm. But I'd really love to see an Ivy-centric episode where she gets brought down to Indian Hill and gets experimented on and gets her plant powers. You know, that'd be fun.
We did get her back briefly, at least this week.
We
so
did.
Ginger to ginger. Ginger to ginger.
I love that line.
Do I have to get the child services person, or should I just go get a candy bar and forget to have someone watch you?
Yeah.
Candy bar.
Oh, Bobby in the chat room says, I have mixed feelings. I just hope this doesn't lead to Freak of the Week. I think they've abandoned the Freak of the Week format after last season. It. You know, we get freaks on certain weeks, but they're not the Freak of the Week. Mm-hmm. They just happen to be a freak within the week we're currently in.
Right.
You know, with the serialized storytelling and everything.
Right.
Speaking of the storytelling decisions, though, I read a really good interview with the writer who I forgot to grab the name or a link to the article, but she was talking about how they were trying to cram in an A. You know how I keep talking about A, B, C, and D stories? She said they were trying to cram an A, B, C, and D story into every episode last season. So that might be why it felt so cluttered. Now they have more time. Yeah, they have more time to kind of tell one or two or three stories in an episode and just kind of let the characters kind of breathe and play with each other, which is fun. But she also said, because I was going to go through that whole Indian Hill scene at the end and be like, okay, the lady in leather might be, I don't know, Lady Shiva, and the dude, which I still think this might be the case, the dude in the bandages all around his face might be Killer Croc. But she said that a lot of the characters you see there right at the end, they were just sort of examples, like, this is the kind of thing going on down here. These aren't specific villains that you're necessarily going to see. But these are the kind of characters and kind of situations that are possible.
So Dahlmarker worked for Wayne Enterprises?
Maybe. We'll see. Because, I mean, it did. Some of them looked a little bit.
That was very Dahlmarker-esque.
Dahlmarker-esque. And Dahlmarker's due for a return.
Yes.
I would love to see him fish out, too. Maybe
especially after that big, fish is never coming back. Fish is coming back. Fish will always come back. Fish will never come back last week.
Plus the whole thing where he was like, I'm going to give you like a head transplant or whatever when she tried to break out that one time.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
But yeah, I really enjoy the possibilities of Indian Hill. And while I don't think – I think it's going to be something that's going to come into play the second half of the season after they kind of wrap up this Order of St. Dumas, Theo Gallivan story arc. Or at least, get it all out in the open and breathing. And then they'll bring in the Indian Hill stuff. But stay tuned.
So, damn it, Ed!
Was that in this episode?
Damn it, Ed!
There was so much in this episode, I barely remembered.
Hashtag rip Krigma. I give it a name and away it goes.
This is how the Kringle crumbles.
This is how the Kringle crumbles. Why did you have to go and tell Kristen that you murdered her boyfriend in front of her apartment?
Well, I mean, she was definitely giving every indication that she'd probably be okay with it. I'd love to see him dead. She's like, I'd love to see him dead. I want Ed to be more honest with me. I want him to be tougher.
Yeah, I mean, all that's
then
nice.
Then she accuses him of not being a fighter, and he's like, hey,
yeah,
I
that
have
was
a secret.
The last straw. That was very obviously the last straw. But I don't know. Maybe say you had an altercation with him like you did, but give it a different ending. Give it a different ending. Don't be like, oh, I killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Can't you just be like, I sent him away?
Or don't be gleeful about it. At least be like, oh my God, I had to do it. I had to kill him.
Yeah. I mean, well, maybe not quite that. That's a little extreme. But but at least somewhat, like, not, no, I killed, like, very cash.
Yeah.
Like, he's been holding this back for so long, and now he's like, yeah, I killed him.
Mm-hmm.
For you. I did it all for you. I would do everything for you. I want to spoil you.
You know what I thought was the stupidest thing in the world from such a smart guy?
Yeah.
To keep the badge in his drawer.
Yes!
Like,
yes, but
secret murderer rule 101, you don't keep any evidence, especially in your home.
Like, no.
Bury it out in the woods somewhere so you can go look at it and be like, yeah, I killed that guy. Awesome.
But it's a token thing. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, not
I was about to grab my Gotham badge, but then I remembered to keep it on my desk at work now.
Mine's in a drawer somewhere. That's where I keep my token. No, but I'm like, I wonder what his token will be from her.
Her ponytail.
I was thinking...
The glasses.
It was the glasses. I really think it'll be the glasses. Mm-hmm. How's he going to get rid of the body?
I don't know. Well, I mean, he has ways.
He has ways, but I kind of think this is going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back, and he's going to go crazy now. Like, more crazy.
Yeah, I think there's a situation where he's going to have to choose whether to go full Riddler, fully off the grid, away from the police department, and lean hardcore into the supervillain thing. Maybe go give Penguin a visit. Be like, hey, you got a job? Kind of like Butch did this episode with Theo. Or he's going to have to hide himself even more. Although I was thinking, he does have like a reasonable alibi here. Because in the conversation that Lee had with Kringle in this episode, Kringle sets up that she has a crazy ex-boyfriend who could hurt her. She's probably told other people that he would kill her if he ever saw her with another man. So, and plus Ed has the badge to leave as evidence.
Oh.
So I think there's a very good case here that he could leave the body somewhere with the badge. People would put two and two together with Lee corroborating from a story told earlier that day. The crazy ex-boyfriend killed her and ran off.
And he knows how to get rid of all the DNA evidence of, you know, the fact that they just slept together.
Well,
and he choked her.
And Bobby says the writer was Rebecca Perry, Cutter. At the same time, I think there's almost enough evidence and enough of a story there to where he might not have to.
Oh, he will, though. He's the coroner guy.
Well, no, Lee is now.
Yeah, but he works with all of that.
Yeah, he gets into it. He gets into it a little bit.
So, I don't know.
Gonna go out on a limb here. But
yeah.
Maybe he'll carve her up and shove her body parts in the locker again like he did last year.
But we like Lee. He's not going to try and get rid of Lee.
No, I was talking about Kringle.
I know.
This is how the Kringle crumbles. Get shoved into a locker. Okay, so in this episode, the Cat in the Hat strikes back. Cat is back, and she's in charge, and this is probably the most Cat-centric episode we've had, for sure. I mean,
even more, I think, than the one where she was getting kidnapped.
Yeah, the episode 3, yeah, because there was that element in it, but at the same time, there was a lot of other stuff going on in that episode, and it focused more on Jim, really.
Yeah, really.
In him solving the case. This was really full-in focused on Cat, Selina, Kyle. Now, last week I had some problems with her acting. Like, I thought it felt a little cheesy, a little over the top, a little I don't know, like old movie tough kid, you know, hey, mister, you know, that kind of stuff. Like,
but she's always had an element of that.
She has had an element of that, but I thought it was a little too much. But in this week's episode, I thought she displayed a lot of nuance in her performance, a lot of emotion, a lot of a range of emotion, too. Yeah. It wasn't just like tough cat, sad cat, alley cat, you know,
black cat.
There were like nine lives there within one person, you know, so I really enjoyed her performance. Overall, I'm not sure if it's a friend of the show, TJ Scott's direction that did it, or
if that makes a difference. A lot of times, I mean, a good director can bring out a good actor.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And I mean, I know in TV a lot of times a director's kind of workman, like, you know, you just come in, you plan your shots, you come in, do the day, and you're done. But at the same time, I really felt like Cameron gave some extra attention to her performance. It really showed.
Yeah, it definitely felt like it.
Okay. And I also appreciated the nods to her knowledge and ties to the world of prostitution in this episode. Mm-hmm. with it, you know, the whole slavery angle that they come steal money from, and then Bridget comes and busts up later on. Because in a Frank Miller's version of Catwoman's origin, she is a prostitute to start with, and her and her friend Holly, I think the name is, but she's a prostitute. She's friends with prostitutes, and she comes out of that and becomes the Catwoman. So I thought it was a nice little nod to, even though Frank Miller's not my favorite version of Batman, like I'm not a huge fan of Year One or especially Dark Knight Returns, mainly for how they treat Superman. I thought it was a nice little nod to the backstory from the comics. But it got me thinking, you know, well, I'll get to why in a minute, but you know, what if she ends up going down that route a little bit? Like,
which seems a little odd. Like, this might sound stupid, but she's as covered up as she can humanly be, and she's always as covered up as she could be for somebody to make the switch to being a prostitute.
Yeah.
I think that would have to be forced into, and I don't know if anybody's forcing her to do anything.
Well, I don't think anyone's going to necessarily force her to do anything, but again, I think she's running out of options, but I'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
Again, we see in this episode, you know how I was talking last week about her and her family trying to find a family, her family always letting her down, and maybe Bridget can be her new family sort of thing?
Yep. Unfortunately, not anymore.
Yeah. Yet again, she loses somebody she cares about in this episode, Bridget. You know, the hug she gave Bridget on the rooftop was heartbreaking because
it really was.
You know, she was like, oh, it's fine, whatever. You got to look out for yourself.
I don't care about you.
Whatever. And then, like, she runs back into frame and gives her the hug because she kind of knows one way or the other, I'm probably not seeing you again. Either you're going to jail or you're going to the grave. And so it was very heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was funny how Bridget cites Selina and Selina's talk about being free and, you know, watching out for yourself and this, that, and the other. As the reason why she was going out there and she was going to remain Firefly and go bust up this place and actually move away from Selina. Like, right. Selina's advice is what caused her to lose Bridget, more or less. So I'm wondering, is this a case of Selina sabotaging herself, or is it just bad luck? Because, I mean, we've seen so many people walk away from Selina, and a lot of times it's due to her actions or her response to their caring about her.
Right.
Is she intentionally sabotaging herself because no one can replace mommy, or you know
that might be it, and I think that she kind of was looking to Bridget for that, but then was serving that purpose, and I think that's where the problem was, is that Bridget doesn't want a mommy. She didn't want a mommy, and Selina was sort of being like, okay, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to take this bus and get off at this spot,
yeah,
do whatever you want from there, but you have to do this.
And that being said, I think if her brothers hadn't shown up, she would have gone on that bus and
but that was the life. Again, there's a lot of last straws. Mm-hmm. Everybody's snapping this week. Everybody's snapping.
Yeah, especially, like I said, I think Kat is going to be going down a very dark road here because now she's lost everyone she ever cared about. She's lost her mom. She's lost Fish, Bruce, Gordon in this episode. She parts ways with pretty harshly. Bridget, she even sold out Penguin, so she probably doesn't have that sweet freelancing gig anymore with Penguin.
Yeah.
So where does a cat turn when cornered? I guess we're going to find out, but it's probably not going to be good.
It doesn't look like it's going to be
good. Probably
no,
probably not.
No. All right, so Bruce is back to his hardcore training with Alfred. Definite progress to his boxing. Mm-hmm. Versus last season, minus the dancing around like a showgirl.
Although I will say that, you know, where a couple weeks ago Alfred slapped Kat.
Yeah.
And there was like eruption. He's flat out knocks Bruce over.
He distracts him and then knocks him out, and nobody says a stinking word.
Almost breaks his nose. Maybe it's because he's the Batman and they're like, yeah, the Batman can take it.
Yeah, he's still 14.
Yeah, he's still 14. Bottom line is
because he's a bully instead of a girl.
Alfred enjoys child abuse. I mean, that's bottom line here.
This is training.
And that's okay.
And he knows Kat could handle it.
He's of the old ways.
He's of the old ways.
Where you beat your kids.
But see, senseless. Now that's going to get me on a tangent. It's like, why was it okay?
Mm-hmm.
It should never be okay, but it fits in the story, so even last time I thought it was kind of okay.
Yeah, yeah, like I honestly didn't have any problem with it.
No.
Within the context of the story.
Right.
Again, in real-world context.
If I was just walking by and
if I was walking through the Batcave and I saw that happen, I'd be like, whoa, I'm in the Batcave. Also, Alfred, no.
Yes, just like that.
Stop
Alfred,
it.
No.
No, Alfred. Bad Alfred.
Bad Alfred. Go to your cave.
Bad butler. Go make me a sandwich. Go ahead.
Put the kettle on. But it was nice that we got back to the computer thing a little bit. And he's like, so have
although you... it was kind of lip service to it. Like, yeah, that plot thread's still up in the air.
Right. But, you know, it's bringing it back, especially with how we're getting so much more Wayne Enterprises stuff right now.
Uh-huh.
It does make me question whether he's actually fixing it or him and Alfred have an agreement to make this take a very, very, very long time.
Well, they did get pretty chummy there, and they did seem pretty much on the same page. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
But we're going to have, and we'll talk about this more in a little bit, but we're going to have somebody else looped in on that whole thing soon, too.
Interesting.
And that could provide some interesting pathways, too. I mean, it's no surprise, Theo Gallivan. They talk about it this episode.
Theo.
But it's going to be interesting. I did enjoy the little check-in on the training. I'm glad to see it's progressing.
Well, it's nice to see Bruce and, away from Silver.
Yeah, the cave felt bigger this time, too.
I see, and I thought it felt smaller.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Very.
Must have not been wearing my glasses or something.
Probably.
Okay, so I guess, you know, while we don't have anything big from this episode to really talk about, I think it's time to look at that Joker. Look at the Joker.
Look at the Joker.
He's a Joker.
Please look at this Joker.
Everybody's looking at him. Look at this Joker. Yes, look at this Joker, where we look at all the suspects, references, etc., about our favorite character, the Joker, on Gotham.
This falls under etc.
And etc. Okay, so, you know, we'll scroll down through here. There's the comedian. Yeah, this is all the Gotham stuff we've collected. Oh, look, Viper guy.
Hey, Viper guy.
Do we mention Indian Hill there? Nope. Keep going.
That's a whole big bunch of nope.
Yeah, keep on going into this week's, and it's way down here. Suicidal Joker. Yes, they released some pictures from Suicide Squad this week, which I thought was were worth pointing out. The new Jared Leto Joker.
So excited.
First up, we have him in his pimp coat here.
His pimp coat.
Yeah, well, he has the pimp cane, he has the pimp coat, he has the pimp tattoos, although pimps really don't have tattoos.
No.
But yeah, this is a very, I mean, we've got a lot of good looks at him already, but this is another really good look at him from the cover of Empire magazine.
Well, they did a big whole feature, too.
Yeah, they have a whole big feature. There's an alternate cover with Enchantress, a bunch of cast photos, including this one that I thought was pretty interesting, and that's Mr. J. And Harley. Harley as a, you know, psychologist Harlene Quinzel.
That picture.
Yeah, and the Joker in a straitjacket. Looks like he has some tattoos, but not all.
Not all of them.
Because I think in the Suicide Squad, Harley is going to be his main tattoo artist, among other things. But yeah, they're sitting at a table across from one another, and he looks kind of like sick to his stomach or something. Perfect. But it looks really cool, looks really moody, and I can't wait for this movie.
I'm so excited. August 5th, 2016.
August 5th. That's a long way to wait.
That is a really long way to wait. Mm-hmm. However, that'll be a nice early birthday present.
Yes, definitely. And so soon after Batman v Superman.
When does that come out again?
I'm kind of thinking that the Joker might end up being in that too.
That
comes out March 25th or something like that. I know it was like 5 months a few days ago. Five months exactly. So that'll be about it. Unfortunately, we didn't have any Joker references from this week's episode. So I guess you'll have to tune in next week to find out if we can look at this Joker again. Do, 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 do. Look at this Joker. Contest, Anne Marie. What are we giving away?
Hey, we're giving it away. We have the Comic-Con version of the TV Guide with Gotham on the cover.
Yes, the exclusive Comic-Con version. But it goes into all DC TV
all
stuff.
All sorts of, yeah, and well, there's a lot of DC TV stuff now.
There is, definitely.
There's Arrow and Flash and Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow. Is that the other one?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I haven't heard much about that one yet.
But we will mail this to you in the actual mail. All you have to do...
In the actual mail instead of imaginary mail.
This is the last week to do it because we're going to announce the winner next week's episode.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to iTunes, leave us a review, or you can post about our show on social media, you know, your Twitters, your Tumblrs, your Reddits, anywhere
Yeah, somebody tumble us.
Or Reddit us. But, and you know, just proselytize about the show. Get out there. Tell people why you like our show, why you listen to it, and why they should listen to it, too.
Yep.
Either way, just go ahead and, if you can, shoot us an email, legendsofgotham@gmail.com, so we notice it. Mm-hmm. But iTunes reviews we'll notice anyway, because I check those a couple times a week. Yeah.
Yeah. We're kind of obsessed with iTunes reviews.
Including this one from K. Swartword. It says, great host. Love when they reference the different comic book worlds and how they relate to the episode, because I have never read any of them. And it's nice to have that background filled in. Great recaps of episodes also. Highly recommended.
Yay!
So thank you, Kay Swartword. And,
thank you, Kay.
Yeah, we just left on October 24th. And also, sometimes iTunes takes a few days to get those posted. So you better act quick, just so it's in there before we select the winner next week.
Yeah.
Okay, Anne-Marie, why don't you tell them, because, and this will become apparent once you see the cover here. Let me get it pulled up.
Do you want me to read this whole thing?
Yeah, in just a second.
Okay.
But, hold on, let me see if I can get a bigger.
We're holding for mallets.
Yes, the mallet hand that Butch has this week's episode reminded me of a little book I put out last year, around this time, maybe a little earlier, called Dog Boy Demon Stare, part of my Dog Boy Adventure series. Mm-hmm. And I haven't plugged that really on the show, middle of the show.
Yeah.
This entire year, so I thought it would be a good time to do it. Anne-Marie, why don't you tell them about book 3 of Dog Boy Adventures, Demon's Dare.
Welcome to the place where dreams come true. Curly World, closed down years ago, forgotten on the outskirts of Colta City. So why does a cyclotron spin? Why do trains rush over the wooden tracks of Demon's Dare?
Demon's Dare.
Dog Boy, aka Bronson Black, is Colta City's 14-year-old superhero. When the Guild of Thieves, which I almost said monkeys, resurfaces, Dog Boy and his girlfriend Cindy McNeil follow a trail of abducted children to an abandoned theme park where the general amusements hide a dark secret Dog Boy was bred to uncover. To step inside is to step out of time into a kingdom of magic surprises and thrills designed to turn Dog Boy's world on its ear. How will he answer the demon's dare?
The demon's dare. Yeah, and it's a very...
Sorry for the dramatic reading.
Oh, no, it's okay. No, but it's a very Gotham-esque series, I would say. This one in particular I wrote before Gotham ever came on the air. So they, if anyone stole the mallet hands from anybody, it was them who stole it from me, although I don't think they did. I think it's just a huge coincidence. But one of the main characters, Hot John, he's a boxer. He has mallets for hands. But if you want to check that out, it's bit.ly/demonsdare. And if you do, let me know what you think, and I'll send you all the other books for free. And you can get it on Audible, Amazon, Nook. There's a paperback version of it. Anywhere fine books are sold, you can find Dog Boy's Demon Dare.
Fine books are sold online.
Yes,
you can
definitely.
Find it.
All right, so I guess we'll get back into our main Gotham discussion. But hold on. The phone's ringing. The bat phone.
Ring.
Hey, hello? Hello?
Dylan, Anne-Marie, this is Holy Bat Pastor.
Holy Bat
Pastor! Hey, I'm headed to a class tonight, so I won't be able to join you guys during the chat and the live broadcast. But I wanted you both to know that you're on my mind, and oh my God, I love this show. I wish I had more time to go in depth as to all the reasons why. But since I'm in a hurry, I'm going to leave you with a top 5 list.
Yay.
These are the top 5 signs that you're having a bad day from Gotham Season 2, Episode 6, entitled By Fire.
Excellent.
Or,
I love these.
As I prefer to affectionately call it, I Found My Thrill on Indian Hill. Starting with number 5, your boyfriend insists on sharing his trophy collection with you, but he kicks off the presentation with a souvenir lifted off of your ex, the crazy dead one. Number 4, you're invited to an intimate formal dinner party, and the hostess shows up late. Okay, actually, that's not as bad as is the blood splatter on her right cheek. Number 3, remember that pyromaniac punk kid half-sister you used to torment? She's coming over for a visit with a flamethrower and a nasty grudge. Number 2, you reveal your deepest, darkest confessions to your new girlfriend, but she gets all choked up. And number 1, the number 1 sign that you're having a bad day. During a job interview, one of your potential supervisors addresses you as Stumpy. I love this episode. Out of 100 candy bar bribes, I would give it high marks, a 98. So I'm going to end it here. This has been Holy Bat Pastor reminding you, hashtag all y'all suck. And I mean that lovingly. Good night, Gothamites.
Excellent.
Yes!
We love hearing from Holy Bat Pastor. Every time you can interrupt us on the Bat Phone anytime you like.
You need to, absolutely.
Definitely. Okay, but speaking
so back to Batman.
Yeah, something that Holy Bat Pastor brought up there was the Burnt Brothers.
The Burnt Brothers
roasting on an open fire. Okay, so first of all, I thought these characters were way better this week.
Yeah,
they were way less cartoony, over the top, kind of mustache twirly. Which I mean, there's a
you
time
love a mustache twirly villain. Let's not get that twisted.
But it was too much. I thought they kind of brought them back down to reality just enough to where I could appreciate the cartoonish nature of them. For example, the flicking of the fireworks, which isn't something that any smart person would ever do, but it was a wicked little moment.
It was awful.
Watching it there.
I felt so bad.
Again, though, even though they were slightly more realistic, they're not the smartest firecrackers in the firecracker string.
Firecracker.
Again, a very dumb idea, letting Bridget have access to her Firefly gear again, letting her go. In the end, they kind of burnt themselves. Yes?
How did she have her Firefly gear again?
That's a good question. I'm guessing she probably found it, or they had more.
No. There's no way she found it. They took her back to the house and locked her up. Her gear should be at Kat's. I thought I saw it at Kat's in her arsenal of guns.
Well, they locked her up, but then they let her go on the because they were like, okay, she's good and obedient Bridget again.
But they let her go. She was let go for 3 minutes. How did it get back to that house?
I don't think it was 3 minutes. I think there was an amount of time between X and Y.
I don't think it was a long amount of time, though.
Well, I mean, it might not have been long within the show because it's a 40-minute show covering a few days. But, you know, I think in the world of the show, it was at least a few hours.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say
I did not get that impression at all.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying, like, that's what I took it to be.
Took it to be that they apparently had another flamethrower in the other
room. It was like, there were one, I can't remember exactly, but there were one or two, three scenes in there, a couple of them where Jim was one place, then he was across town, you know, so I assume there was an amount of time passing.
I mean, that type of stuff, I guess I can deal with when it's, you're changing sets.
Yeah.
But this was within the same set.
But I mean, both scenes were in the same set, but there were scenes in between with...
Was there scenes in between?
Yeah, with individual characters changing sets, like going from set to set.
Didn't feel long to me, that's all I'm saying.
That's fair, but I have actually a bigger problem.
Okay.
And that's, how did they find Bridget on the street like that when, you know, the Gotham PD is looking for, like, everyone's looking, I'm sure those pimp daddies that they stole the money from are probably looking for her and everything. How did they just happen to find her when she was on the way to the bus station when everyone else in town is looking for her and can't find her? They're not the smartest.
No, they're not.
Gunpowder in the gunpowder keg.
They're
not the smartest. They're not the smartest, sharpest.
Sharpest tool in the shed?
Yes, they're not the sharpest firecracker in the fire knife.
Okay, I'm gonna rescue you from yourself.
Okay,
so,
thank you.
Captain Barnes and Detective Gordon, you know, they started off with such a lovely relationship. And then we realized that Barnes wanted to do everything by the book, with probably slightly excessive force, but still by the book.
Yeah, that's the one thing. I think it was weird how he kind of walked back because it seemed like he wanted to prosecute, or he wanted to get the criminals identify the criminals by the book, but then he wanted to rough them up, you know, on the side.
Yeah.
That's the impression I got, but I guess not.
All right, no. There was definitely, he wanted everything to be done by the book, and I think it was odd. So, does Jim feel partially responsible for the Strike Force guy's death, and that pushes him to investigate so hard using Gotham methods of, you know, kicking the crap out of a guy?
Well, we've seen Jim this season sort of be a bit more okay with Gotham.
Right. Well, I'm not even... Yeah, I know he's okay with those methods, but it felt like he took it personally when that guy died.
Yeah, well, I think it probably brought to mind Shades of Essen, you know.
Okay.
I think it probably tapped into those emotions that he's still feeling. Because, I mean, that was only a few episodes ago, too.
Right. But by your theory, that should be, 6 months. No.
it also feels like... he's a lot more identified with sort of the thin blue line of thinking where, you know, a cop's life is worth more than just about any other life sort of thing, which we saw him fighting against in season one.
Right.
So, again, it's very interesting to see.
The change.
Yeah, how Jim's changed.
Okay, yeah, because it's weird because he barely bats an eye when the other members of the Strike Force tell him that they're going to report into Barnes, and he, in fact, tells them to do it. Like, what did he – did he not think that Barnes would do anything? Like, he's obviously a actions guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he actually didn't do anything about it.
Yeah, I know.
It was like the smallest reprimand I've ever seen.
Naughty.
Slap on the wrist because, you know.
Especially after he blew into the department firing everybody who looked at him funny.
Right.
Know?
Seriously. And it just, you know, I'm surprised he didn't question how Gordon knew the other person in the robbery picture.
Mm-hmm.
And just took off to, like, get her and didn't go take the Strike Force with you or anything.
Yeah.
You know, even – he didn't even take Bullock. Mm-hmm. And Bullock and Kat, you know, they don't not get along. So
– yeah, well, I will say that after the Strike Force guys ratted on him, it seemed very obvious that he didn't want anything to do with them anymore.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like, he was either independent or with Bullock the entire rest of the episode.
Except at the end when they got her.
Yeah,
and he had the entire Strike Force and the captain with him.
But that was a case of where he needed to bring the captain in with him because the captain wasn't having him just going in to do things on his own because he couldn't trust him.
It's very true. I think there is something deeper with Barnes because at one point he mentions how he learned things the hard way too.
The hard way.
So I'm thinking at some point he used Gotham methods wherever he was,
mm-hmm.
and somehow it came back to bite him.
Yeah,
somebody that he cared about got taken away in some way, shape, or form, made a deal with the devil, and it went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that, I think, happened, and now he's. That's why he's very by the book.
Yeah, I do hope we get that backstory because that was very intriguing the way they said that. Like, I would love a flashback or at least, you know, he sits down and tells Jim a story about how he, I don't know, beat kids after learning it from his commander in the army, Alfred. You know, something like that would be nice.
Oh, Alfred.
Alfred.
Up to you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But I am interested, and I'm still not entirely unconvinced that Barnes isn't working for Theo Galvin or something along those lines either. Like, he seems authentic, but at the same time,
who knows?
I could see him double crossing and, you know, revealing another side to himself. Maybe part of that learning it the hard way has to involve with someone getting leverage over him, and that's why he's. At the GCPD, keeping track of Jim Gordon and doing what he's doing.
Interesting.
Being the new Jim Gordon from last season. Okay, so on the subject of Butch. Old mallet hand. Obviously, you know, last week's episode, wonderful performance by Drew Powell. Mm-hmm. He gets his hand chopped off.
We haven't done it in a while. Sorry.
Okay, we've done it in a while now. Okay, but I've been pushing this idea with Butch over the course of this season that Butch's loyalty to Penguin, yes, has a lot to do with Saz's mind control. But at the same time, there's actual some love, some affection there for Penguin, or some growing affection for Penguin, some loyalty to Penguin.
Mm-hmm.
But this episode, I think, convinced me otherwise. Because I think it's obvious, for one, that he's setting Penguin up.
Yeah.
And because, you know, we never saw him go to a warehouse where he discovered Penguin's mom. He just saw Mrs. Penguin on TV. Mrs. Cobblepot. Mrs. Penguin.
Mrs. Penguin was just on the TV.
Mrs. Penguin. But I think it's very obviously a setup. But I don't know what Tabitha did to change him. But he wasn't having nearly as many twitches as he was having when he was talking to Theo Galavan, when he was talking to Penguin later on. So I feel like maybe
he jumped ship.
Yeah, I feel like maybe they actually broke the brainwashing, didn't rebrainwash him, and you know he's actually doing this to help Theo Galavan now.
Interesting.
I have a feeling he switched sides, and we're going to see the double cross happen next week's episode.
Maybe she used nicer methods.
Could be.
She did find him attractive.
Could be. But then again, she wasn't being very nice with that whip.
I mean, it all depends on what you're into.
And she had the blood on her
face. He had you still have to put on the show.
Yeah, I guess.
You couldn't send him back to Penguin, you know. Clean.
Yeah, very true.
So, and that was sort of could be a sign to Theo.
Mm-hmm.
Stop.
It has been done.
It is finished.
My brother. Okay, so there was, speaking of that table that she comes to with the blood on her cheek, You want to talk a little bit about Silver, St. Cloud?
Oh, Silver. How much does this girl know? Like, she lives in this apartment where you have people coming in with that now have mallets on their hands, congressmen who are hanging for their lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's not stupid, I don't think. She's only said about six things in the two episodes.
Yeah, I was going to say, overall, she just feels kind of there to me.
And I'm not enjoying that. If she's going to be there, let's do something with it.
Yeah.
So,
At least have some nice, cute little scenes between her and Bruce to where right. You see why she's distracting him so much. Or she's such
it's
a...
It's just because she's pretty. That's what we're on right now, is just because she's pretty. Women are more than objects, people. But like, I don't know, maybe she doesn't know the whole plan. How much of the plan does she know? Does she just know her role? Is mm-hmm. her part of the apartment soundproof? Like, there's a lot of questions around her, and I don't know if we're going to get
that. I would assume two contradictory things.
Okay.
Either she's completely looped in and she's completely on board with the plan, or she's completely separated from the plan and she only knows that her Uncle Theo wants to set her up with this nice Wayne boy because it'll be good for business and the mayorship and the family.
Right.
You know, so it's one or the other.
And that's the thing, is it's one or the other, and we just...
Remains to be seen.
Question mark.
I will say that based on her role in the comics...
She's in on it.
The character's role in the comics, no, that she's... ignorant.
Oh, really?
I would almost want to say she's ignorant. She just thinks he's cute, and she's like, yeah, Theo, I'll play along, you know?
Well, David is cute.
Yeah.
For a 14-year-old boy.
Agreed.
Agreed. You like 14-year-old boys?
No.
Not like that.
Sorry. I got a little distracted. My headphones were short.
Oh, is that so, what was happening over
yeah,
there?
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of Theo, though, Theo's plans for Bruce Wayne develop more in this episode. Obviously, he's not quite ready to kill him yet. But he's close. At this point, I think Theo wants looped in on the investigation that Bruce is doing about Wayne Enterprises and Thomas Wayne. So he's telling Bruce what he wants to hear. He's trying to distract him from his true calling with things like Silver, with these promises of helping him bust up Wayne Enterprises and Thomas Wayne. So he can find a way to get his fingers into Wayne Enterprises, take it over, avenging that old-timey dude who got his hand chopped off from last week.
Yeah, that guy.
And I think he's also using Silver in a lot of ways to do this, to...
distract.
Yeah, to keep Bruce from doing too good of a job looking into things, and also so he has his fingers on the pulse of what's going on. As we move forward, I have a feeling that he's going to get Bruce to introduce him into the whole Alfred Lucius loop at some point, and Alfred will be down with it because he seems to trust Theo a lot, especially once he's mayor.
I'm not convinced.
I could see that happening, though, especially since...
I don't think Lucius will fall in line.
Well, I mean, to Bruce at this point, like, it feels to Bruce anyway, like this guy knows about his dad, knows he was a good man. Like you said, he's telling him what he wants to hear.
Right.
Your dad was a good man. His company is not a good company. Right. I'm going to help you take him down.
Right.
The same sorts of things that Lucius is telling him, that Alfred's telling him. And I mean, we found out in the last episode he appeared in that Lucius doesn't really even know all that much about what Thomas Wayne was up to.
He purposely didn't know it.
Yeah, just like Lucius Fox from the comics in relation to Batman. You know, he supplied what he needed to supply so Thomas Wayne could do what he thought he needed to do. So I think it's going to be interesting to see, but that's my prediction for this week, is that Theo's going to be looped in on that whole circle of trust here sooner rather than later. And it's going to bite them in the ass.
Basically. So,
and then Alfred's going to punch a kid again.
So who's he?
Silver St. Cloud.
I was going to say, is it going to be Silver or is it going to be Ivy?
My other prediction, a twofer, right hand Silver, left hand Ivy, Alfred beating kids.
That's what we got for this show. Okay, last slightly silly thing. Kent and Lee. Lee had milk and cookies out for Selena.
That's nice.
That was precious. I was like, this is because she's a child or because she's a cat?
I thought it was really weird that she wasn't more concerned about, you know,
I think she's Selena just come to accept all of this.
Pointing the gun at her the whole time. She's like, eh, whatever.
Well, she was psychoanalyzing the poor kid, too, because that's what she does now.
That's very
true. She's internally psychoanalyzing. She's like, this kid isn't going to hurt me.
Was it just me or was her hair a lot longer this episode than it was in the last episode she was in?
It's longer this season.
It's definitely longer this season. It felt like there was a substantial growth between episodes.
I didn't really notice that much.
Okay.
Prenatal vitamins. Make it grow.
What, she's pregnant? Prediction for next week. Lee Tompkins is pregnant. But it's Alfred's baby. Dun, dun, dun. And then he punches it.
I pay money to see that. And then she punches it.
Okay, Anne-Marie, arbitrary scale. Here, let's see. Out of 14 Alfred punched babies, how many Alfred punched babies do you give this episode?
11 and a half punched babies. No, 12 and a half punched babies.
Why?
Because it's really, really good.
Or wait, should I say?
Oh, stop that. It's awful. So much happened. Rest in peace, Kragma. There was so much movement on many fronts that I'm really excited to see what happens next week.
Oh, yeah. It was just such an intense episode, especially right there at the end, that big montage with
yes, and usually all the villains we're not so nice about montages. Not a fan. Mm-hmm.
But in their dark, crazy moments. Yeah, so good. Bobby gives it 12 Alfred Punch Babies. Me, I think I'm going to give it the hat trick. I'm going to give it the 14 Alfred Punch Babies.
14 Alfred Punch Babies?
Actually, I will give it 14 and a half, which means one of them was a Siamese twin.
We are Siamese, if you please.
That's probably offensive to someone out there.
I'm sorry
about that. Way more offensive than the punching babies part, I'm sure. I really great episode, start to finish. I really love the score, even.
Yes.
Normally, I don't pick up on the score that much.
Because you like dubstep. It's all right.
Blah, 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 blah. No, but I really love the score, the mood, the intensity of everything. I love how
the stakes were high this week. Mm-hmm.
I loved, as much as I hated to see her go, because we're not going to get that long sought after Christmas episode. I really love that they went ahead and pulled the trigger, so to speak, on Kringle. Yeah, I really loved that they're not afraid to go places with it, like big places that you're not expecting them to go, that you're expecting them to wait all season
to
go.
That's the second character this season. Mm-hmm. We're only on episode 6.
Yeah, that feels like the order of the day for this season. You think something's going to take the whole season to play out? No, it's going to happen this episode.
Yeah.
So great episode. Can't wait to see next week.
Good job, Gotham.
Definitely. Good job, Gotham. John Stevens and our friend TJ Scott, Chelsea...
Spack,
did a wonderful job as Kristen Kringle. She will be missed. She will be missed, except for maybe a cameo without any lines as a body next week. But they might do a life mold too. Now on to the news. News. First up, the ratings. Fox's Gotham was up week to week, improved by 0.2, which I think it came out to a 1.5 in the target demographic, 18 to 49 year olds.
Yes.
Which good.
I didn't copy that.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I had it memorized. But not quite season one numbers. But I mean, TV's down across the board.
Yeah, and you know, yesterday was a big day. It's sweeps week, so everybody's pulling out everything.
Very much.
So it's really hard to, you know, lay your allegiances. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I know actually a lot of the discussion forums I read about Gotham, like a lot of them are like, I don't even watch it live. Like I watch it on Hulu.
That's the
or
thing.
Not Hulu, but Fox. DC Comics posted the episode right after it finished. Daring. Yeah, I think before it even aired on the West Coast.
Oh.
They posted the full episode online.
That's because it was a really good episode.
I work in TV. I have no inside knowledge or anything, but I think probably like by the end of this TV season, ratings aren't going to be the deciding factor to a show's success.
No, or at least not just original airing ratings.
Yeah.
Like they need somehow to take into account all of the DVRs and the digital downloads and all the miscellaneous places that things pop up.
Well, I know Time Warner right now, I just read this today, they're testing out an ad-free Time Warner on-demand system for people who don't even have cable.
Oh.
So kind of like a Netflix, but it's Time Warner, and it has all the new shows on it and your local programming and stuff too. Basically what they've been giving cable subscribers for years, but it you don't need cable for. So
that's cool.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty interesting. I mean, I have a feeling ratings aren't going to matter nearly as much 8 or 9 months
from now. I mean, the thing is, like, ratings are just there for ads.
Yeah, and I think ads are going to be less relevant, and
at least in the classical way, I think there will be other.
Yeah, I mean, there will be online ads and stuff, but live TV is going to be less. important overall. Right. For scripted stuff, for you know, news and special events and things like that. Yeah, live TV.
Sports ball.
Live TV is going to be where it's at. But, you know, for things like Gotham, I don't think it's going to be that important.
How many people have we had write in that say we don't watch it live?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I mean, we can't even watch it live because we're recording another podcast.
Okay. Well, before this turns into Legends of Nielsen ratings, why don't we go ahead and watch the trailer for next week's episode, Mommy's Little Monster. I wonder
Mommy's
who that could be
referring to. Mommy's Little Monster.
Oh, it's Mommy's Little Monster.
Hmm. When are we going to unleash a little hell?
Soon. Unleash some hell. Soon. And look, Theo's about to win the mayorship. And then he's calling in some favors on Gordon. Zaz is there for some fun. Chickalus is chickling. Balloons are dropping. People are jumping through windows. Jim shooting an Uzi.
We need the penguin alive!
Lots of craziness. And then Penguin and Jim have guns on each other. Mm-hmm. And Theo's like, hey, Jim, kill him.
Just do it. Just kill the penguin. It's fine. Don't worry. I won't tell anybody. I'm the mayor. You can trust me.
No. Looks very intense, though.
Yeah.
It's only going to get more intenser, for sure. I can't wait to see every other episode this season, because every episode this season so far has topped the last one.
It really has.
Which we've heard that a lot from you guys, too, which, you know, we've recorded the show the night after Gotham airs. So you really need to, you know, when the episode's done airing.
Mm-hmm. In your time zone.
Okay, so first of all, you're going to run into a kid. Punch the kid. Kid's going to fall down. Take out your flamethrower. Burn the kid to a crisp.
Do not burn the kid.
Jump over the kid. Get to your communications device. Email us, legendsofgotham@gmail.com. Tweet us at Legends of Gotham. Facebook is facebook.com/Legends of Gotham. And the voicemail number, which you can use the bat phone for, 424-274-2352. Again, that's 424-274-2352. Yes, Commissioner?
It's time for the voicemails.
It's Bobby. Take it away, Bobby.
Hey, Bill and Amory, it's Bobby. Okay, let me first start off by saying I cannot overstate how much that I feel this show has grown from the first season. It started off being like a GCPD police procedural, and that's what everyone thought it was going to be, and it would give us little like hints and nods at like, oh, look what this could be, look what that might be. But over time, it's added more and more and it's taken a minute for it to really like find its footing. But I feel like after last night, it's just fully embraced, like balls to the wall, pedal to the metal. This is a comic book show, but that doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't also or can't also be a GCPD show. And I felt like that's what last night's episode did a good job of doing, of like putting so many elements into the show without making it feel overcrowded. Sure, we had the main storyline of Firefly, and I keep wanting to say Fireproof, but anyway, Firefly and the GCPD and Catgirl. Great performances all around, I felt. I really like what they did with the Firefly character. I thought they did a good job of showing her evolution over just two episodes of like going, you know, it was almost forced upon her. Like Bullock said, those asshats deserved it. But, you know, like she didn't mean for a lot of that to happen. It just kind of happened. And, you know, one bad day, you know? Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you've had like Bruce and Alfred. We got to see Bruce and Alfred training for a minute. Sure, it was only for a minute, but it was cool to see that. And then what's going on with Bruce and Galavan? What, you know, where's that manipulation headed? Is Silver in on the manipulation, or is she just being used as a pawn in this whole thing? Speaking of Galavan, what's going on with Butch and Penguin and Galavan? Did Butch really turn on Penguin, or did he turn on Galavan?
I think he turned on
really
Penguin.
Nice little like cliffhanger going into next episode. Where was I going? Nygma. We finally like broke that egg or whatever you want to call it. That's not a saying. We finally, I don't know, it happened. He killed Chris. You know, we knew she wasn't long for this world, but he finally did it. And once again, the show is able to make me feel sympathy for the Riddler for killing such It was messed up, but he didn't mean to do it. He didn't want for that to happen. Mm-hmm. But the whole time I was like, why are you telling her that? Just tell her that, like, you made him leave somehow. You know,
Thank you.
You became forceful and told him to get out of town or else, you know? And maybe she might not have believed it, but I don't know. That was really dumb of you, Enigma. Really dumb. Okay, but then let's not beat around the bush. What the hell? Okay, we teased it last season, kind of, with the useless piece of land, toxic waste, being toxic waste dump over a Indian burial ground, but like, whoa, what the hell is going on down there? I'm pretty sure I saw glimpses of Killer Croc even. Or something that could be, or something, I don't know.
Yeah,
But once again, after those last 2 or 3 minutes, this show just went balls to the wall, comic book. This may be the last we've seen a Firefly, but I think the next time we see her, she'll be fireproof.
Wasn't Firefly canceled?
Wow. So, really? I just hope upon hopes that this whole Indian Hill testing facility doesn't turn into like a, freak of the week situation. Mm-hmm. That being said, I'd really like to see Butch with a chainsaw in his hand. That'd be pretty cool. So I'm with Barbara on that one. Arbitrary scale, I will say 31 of 33 little chainsaw hands or little hand chainsaws. really loving what they're doing with this season.
Thank you very much,
Bobby. Thank
you,
Bobby.
Okay, next, this one isn't addressed to us,
show. It's addressed to Bill.
To me. This is from Jim. Thank you, Jim, by the way. Jim says, Bill, you are doing two things that are driving me crazy, and I'm begging you to stop.
Crazy.
Thing number one, when you give the podcast times, you always say Eastern Standard Time. We are not now in EST. We are in Eastern Daylight Time and will be for a few more weeks. If you want a format that is correct year-round that you don't need to think about, you can just say Eastern Time. Thank you very much, Jim. I am humbled. And the second one is the word especially is pronounced especially. You pronounce it especially. I know these are not earth-shattering, but they do bug me. Thanks for reading. Sorry about that, Jim. I'm very sorry. You know, if you come in and you tune in the chat room at 8:30 p.m. EST, I promise I will pronounce words right, especially for you. So thank you very much for writing it. Okay, let's see here.
Let's see. We have some tweets.
Oh, yeah, just some tweets here.
We have one from Wynn Mercer. If local bad weather kills my internet tonight, which I'm assuming it did because she's not here, be it known, I give 10 out of 26s. No, wait.
10 out of 26.
Oh, 10, no, huh? Lies. 10 26s Gotham. 8 out of 10 kicks to a crispy corpse.
Nice.
Nice. Yes.
Very nice.
Apparently, I can't read a date.
And the Powell family gave 9 out of 10 mallet hands.
And like a week and a half ago, we got this happy 50th from our listener, Hope R.
Yes, which is basically just a screen cap from the episode of my head on Barbara's body from The Last Laugh. So happy 50th episode. Thank you, Hope, very much.
It's Bill in a pink outfit.
I'm sorry. Woo! I'm sorry we didn't share that earlier.
We meant to.
Got a couple more voicemails here. Next up is Joel from Portland.
Joel from Portland!
Portland!
Hey, Bill and Anne-Marie. This is Joel from Portland.
Hey.
Here to talk about last night's episode that I titled Butch Get a Tenderizer. So Ed is a medical examiner and he doesn't know CPR, and Kat wrestles a shotgun from a pike but doesn't try to shoot out their tires. And Bridget, she somehow finds a dustpan in Kat's hole in the wall apartment. Anyways, this was a super dark episode. Beyond these plot points, I can't believe that Kringle's dead. Ted gets a little tail and he turns around and chokes her. And then Firefly gets barbecued, so that makes 3 burnt taquitos, but lives somehow. And Gotham has an underground pimp auction, and Wayne Enterprise is running Indian Hill and its House of Freaks. So it's pretty exciting. I mean, I felt real empathy for these characters this week, and I think it's because this is some of the best dialogue and acting that we've seen, if not in this season, the entire series. I think the episode was a bit stretched thin because we had to follow what happened with the Pikes, the cops, Penguin, Ed, not to mention Gallivant and Bruce. So you really hit the nail on the head earlier in the season by mentioning that they're trying to move the story along quickly by jamming as much into each episode as they could. I won't even go into all the callbacks, Easter eggs, and Batman lore in this episode because we would run out of tape. But a return to Indian Hill is going to be huge. I give this episode 25 out of 30 mallet stumps. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you very much, Joel.
We don't use tape anymore, Joel.
Tape. Climbing down to Indian Hill, I could see the firefly.
Wow.
Gurney was rolling, time stood still.
And for our next voicemail
is Michael Lucero. Take it away, Michael.
Hey, Bill and Anne-Marie. It's Michael. I just finished watching that episode. Oh, my gosh. That was such a good episode. It was so sad, though, for so many different reasons.
Yes.
And that ending, that was really creepy. Indian Hill, so it's owned by Wayne Enterprises,
Indian
huh?
Hill.
That's very interesting. That was the place that Maroni and Falcone traded each other in last season, wasn't it? When Penguin ostensibly switched sides in that story arc. I knew it was going to be important then. I think we all did. But now it seems like they're finally going to delve into that. So I'm pretty excited about that. I'm also really like how they dealt with the issue of human trafficking in this episode. That's actually a real issue that's there's I can't remember the exact number, but there's millions of slaves being bought and sold and owned in the world today. And even here, right here in the United States, there's that's a huge social justice issue that I'm personally concerned about. And I'm glad that they addressed that in this episode. Maybe that'll help increase awareness because people do not talk about that enough. Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting that Bridget saw herself in this in the slaves. I don't think I really realized from the last episode that she was in that she was being basically little more than a slave herself. I mean, obviously, it's clear that she was being abused and made to do things she didn't want to do, but mm-hmm. I don't know. It was just so powerful. I feel like Barnes has got to go. He was annoying at first. Now he's just really frustrating, and I don't know. I have very little sympathy for somebody who is all justice, 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 and has no room for mercy, because justice not tempered by mercy is not justice at all. And I just feel like in Gotham, there's so, I don't know, there it's either you're all corrupt or you're all like inflexible and hard and no room for like good judgment calls. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It seems like Gotham is a pretty poisoned place because there's no room for any kind of middle ground between the two. And I think Selina does make good points about trusting cops. I mean, Jim has good intentions, but I think she even pointed out that he even is a little bit too cavalier in the way he writes off tragedies when they happen. So I don't know. I'm really interested in seeing what's going to happen with this police department issue because it's pretty screwed up even how it is. I mean, probably even more so than in season one when it was so corrupt. So I don't know. I'll be interested in to see where that goes. Can't wait to find out what happens to Bridget and Indian Hill. And oh man, that was so sad. And not to mention what happens to Penguin. I'm pretty sure Butch has been unbrainwashed and mm-hmm. is about to betray him. So that should be interesting as well. Well, I'm rambling now, so I'll let you all go. Can't wait to hear the episode. All right, take care. Bye.
Thank you very much, Michael. Good thoughts as always. And last but not least, we're going to wrap up with some thoughts from Rebecca.
Rebecca.
Let's see what Rebecca has to say.
What's up, Legends of Gotham?
What's up?
Rebecca Johnson. And before I get to my thoughts on this week's episode titled By Fire, I wanted to address a tweet from the official Gotham Twitter account that got me fired up. Last night when Supergirl premiered on CBS during Gotham's time slot, they tweeted out, quote, "A new hero rises, but no need to go up, up, and away," unquote. And maybe they were just trying to be clever, but it came across like a dig at Supergirl, and I really hope that's not the start of some stupid rivalry between the two shows. And while I'm on this topic, I would like to commend you guys for supporting Supergirl and Supergirl Radio, and I hope you all know that I genuinely love Legends of Gotham. So any competition between Supergirl and Gotham is non-existent in my book. Now, I just wanted to call in and say how much I enjoyed Selena Kyle in By Fire this week. This was by far the best episode to feature her. I was pleased to see that she didn't sleep with her goggles on for some unknown reason like she did last week. I liked her dynamic with Bridget. I loved her scene with Gorkins. I thought it was fitting that when she stole money, she was stealing from really terrible people because that's a very Catwoman thing for her to do. And her, for the record, all y'all suck. That line is my favorite Cat moment in all of Gotham so far. Also, I am really intrigued about this Indian Hill section of Wayne Enterprises. There was a mention of, quote, the rest of the monsters, unquote. So I was wondering, do you have any guesses as to who those monsters are that could be down there? Anyway, as Butch would say, I thought this week's Gotham was fine like a bottle of wine. And I can't wait to hear your thoughts.
Nice.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Nice. Yeah, and as far as like the whole Gotham tweet Supergirl thing, like, one, I think people that
they're looking for it
were overreacting about the tweet because, one, it was very tongue-in-cheek. It was very much in the tone of the show and that social media account,
especially
which,
the Gotham social media accounts. Yeah. They're very jokey.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and it, at the same time too, if you know, Gotham is a little salty about Supergirl's time slot. Well, they were Monday nights at 8 p.m. first, so they might have a little bit of a right to be. And I mean, I don't necessarily think, especially from a creative side, like, yeah. I really feel no rivalry with the Supergirl show or fans of Supergirl show or Supergirl radio, which I've appeared on. I feel no rivalry with any of those entities at all. But at the same time, if Gotham the show feels a little bit of friendly rivalry with Supergirl the show, I think that's completely okay. I mean, even though there are two DC Comics properties, one, I don't think fans of the show need to necessarily feel like they have to be loyal to all DC properties just because they like DC properties or certain versions of DC characters. I think that that's probably a way to keep from being critical about any DC properties, which I don't think is necessarily good as a fan to do either. Cause I mean, yeah, you got to hold creators to account a little bit if you feel they're going the wrong way. I mean, be polite and everything, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time too, I don't know. DC Comics, for example, Marvel Comics, for example, every month they have 40 to 52 books out there coming out every month that are all in competition with each other. Yep. And these writers, they're friends, but they're also competitors for jobs, for gigs, for, you know, people buying comics. So, I mean, it's not even unfamiliar in the world of comic books for different entities, you know, for the fourth Batman book every month to be in competition with the fourth Superman book every month, you know, right. Like
that may be Superman, there you go.
yeah, but that's kind of how it goes down. And I think it's okay to have a rivalry. I think it's okay to have a friendly rivalry, a little competition, as long as there's no real animosity there, which with the Gotham tweet, I don't think was the case at all.
I don't think it necessarily was. And I know some people think, like Bobby says, he thinks it could have been handled better.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was maybe one of those things. They thought it was hilarious. They weren't trying to be like rude towards anybody. And then they saw how it was reacted. They're like, we're just going to back off and not.
Well, I mean, the tweet's still up there and everything.
Right. But they didn't like keep poking the fire.
Yeah.
Nobody's poking the bear. Like, I don't know.
I also think in a lot of ways, and I'm not pointing fingers to Rebecca or Bobby in the chat room or anyone here or anyone who was in our chat room for Greetings from Storybrooke last night. Not pointing fingers at anybody. Actually, I'm talking more about stuff I've seen elsewhere online. But I think a lot of people were waiting for Gotham to react.
Yes.
Or to say something bad so they could pile on Gotham about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's fair either. I think that's...
People don't want to give Gotham a fair shot anyway.
Yeah, and I think there's more animosity in that action than there is in the Gotham tweet.
Yeah.
You know, but we've had our say. And as I said, next week, punch a baby, burn it up. Email
How
us Legends
of Gotham. How is that better than this tweet?
Email us legendsofgotham@gmail.com. Tweet us at legendsofgotham. Facebook is facebook.com/legendsofgotham. And the voicemail number is 424-274-2352. Again, that's 424-274-2352. Oh, Bobby in the chat room says, but they're not out there saying, read this, not that. Actually, I've read a lot of interviews with comic book writers or writers and stuff. In a lot of ways, they are, but just not directly. They'll be like, you know, this storyline is better than that, or than a storyline that would be like this, referencing a specific storyline in another book at the same company, you know, but they'll keep it just off the line, kind of like how Gotham did with that tweet. So I also think
I'm just going to go to my happy place.
That's just good business too, in some ways too. I think it's okay.
It got people talking.
Emery, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at AMDSimone.
And as for me, you can follow me on Twitter at Bill Meeks. You can pick up my Dog Boy Adventures at dogboyadventures.com, or the one we were talking about earlier, bit.ly/demonsdare. And you can follow all of the podcasts we podcast.
Yep, we podcast.
At universebox.com. Also, this week, Thursday, 8:30 p.m. EST, ET, the journey.
Whatever it is in Florida.
But we're wrapping up our Universe Box podcast for now. It's going on an extended hiatus. We want to blow the doors off, have a big old party. Even if you've never checked out the show before, we highly encourage you to come hang out in the chat room and share your stories.
Share your stories about college, home, coffee, chocolate, depression. Did we do a vacations? There was a vacation.
Yeah, vacations.
Of some sort.
Doctor Who, Harry Potter, Superman.
We did do Harry Potter, Superman. See, we like other things. Disney Renaissance. Mm-hmm. There was other stuff. Go back. We have like 40 episodes.
Yeah, but live.universebox.com Thursday, October 29th, 8:30 p.m.
I love when
Eastern
you're looking
time.
At your calendar.
please join us live. And I think the best way to close out this episode, I mean, Bobby says it in the chat room. Come on, we've all thought about punching a baby or two. Admit it. Join us next time for more
Legends of Gotham. Don't punch a baby.
Do it.
Don't do it.
Punch the baby.
Don't punch the baby.
Punch the baby.
Put the baby in the crib and walk away.